Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I am your host, Jonathan Strickland. Joining me today is one half of the Car Stuff team, Scott Benjamin. Scott, welcome back to the show.
How you doing, John?
I'm doing great. We were going to have Ben Bolin in here, too, but Ben's a man in high demand.
He really is. He's taken over the whole video segment of our
empire.
Well, the empire, I guess. It's growing, right? But, I'm happy to be here as always, and I'm excited about today's topic, too.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about it today. And I should add, Ben totally wanted to be here. He had like 18 things on his calendar today. And as someone who had that yesterday, I totally understand.
Oh, yeah, we get it.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about a little more in depth about some of the technology that was on display at CES 2016, specifically in regards to cars, which is why I got Scott onto the show here to kind of gauge his reactions and maybe even hear your insight on some of this stuff.
Well, you know, I've read about it. Now, you were at the show, of course. So yeah. You saw the stuff firsthand.
A lot of it, yeah.
A lot of this is just me looking at reviews of, you know, what everybody else has written about this stuff.
Sure.
So I'm getting, a different view of the whole thing. I don't get the hands-on experience, but I'll do my best to try to keep up with you. But really, the reaction may be more what you're going for here, because we've got opinions both ways about this. I mean, I know that your listeners have heard us, butt heads on a couple of these issues in the past, right?
Or at least they heard that one very special episode where I pulled the rug out from under you.
I still have nightmares.
That was the one where I think the question was, Scott, I'm going to give you a scenario that in like 10 years it's illegal to drive a car. And then I watched you just kind of wilt.
It was a slow boil from that point on.
Yeah. So one of the things I want to just mention right off the top before going into any specifics is that the car industry has always played a part in CES as long as I have been going. This was my 8th year going. And typically the North Hall of the Convention Center is where you'll find the car tech stuff. Occasionally there'll be some
things out in the actual parking lots that are around the convention center to show practical demonstrations of stuff like driver assist technologies, that sort of thing. But typically, most of the exhibits are inside, so they're static displays. They're not, you know, you're not going to get in the car and drive around or anything. But I've noticed that the trend has been growing year over year, that we're seeing more and more car technologies make their way into the show floor, which is kind of interesting. I mean, I get that they're consumer technology, but often when I hear consumer technology, I'm thinking of smaller things smaller than a vehicle.
Yeah.
Right? Like maybe as big as like a refrigerator, but mostly I'm thinking of things in the television, stereo system world, not things that you park in a garage.
Well, you know, sometimes they get around this by just bringing in maybe the cockpit, the driver cockpit, and the seat.
Right.
That is, you know, integral to whatever they're trying to show or display. And that's enough. But sometimes they want to bring the whole vehicle because it's a whole package now at this point. Everything is connected to everything else, and they want to show you how it all works together and how it feels when you're actually in their true-to-life product that they're going to be coming out with soon. And, in fact, I noticed that there were a couple of early reveals that happened at this show that I just wanted to mention. They brought Chevrolet brought two brand new vehicles for actually aren't going to be out until the end of 2016. Mm-hmm. And this was really weird to me. They brought out the 2017 Chevy Bolt, which is the hatchback or the smaller version of the Chevy Volt, I guess, the updated version. And it wasn't really a reveal. It sort of was. They wanted to show off the whole technology, the whole vehicle, but later, they took it to the Detroit Auto Show, the North American International Auto Show in Detroit.
Right.
And then that's where they officially revealed that vehicle, even though everybody at CES had already seen it.
Yeah, it had been shown off like a week and a half earlier.
Yeah, and similar with the Chevy Cruze hatchback. And I think that they wanted to show some of their safety technologies and some of their advanced technologies that they were going to be bringing out in about a year now at this point, a year and a half, something like that. So interesting how they would really reveal them to the public there and then give them the official reveal, you know, where they pull off, you know, they do the dramatic yanking off of the cover or, you know, have it drive out on stage at the Detroit show.
Yeah, it's interesting to see CES play home to that sort of announcement or non-announcement almost, where you do get this early look at stuff that normally would be reserved for an auto show or even just a press event for that specific company. It's kind of showing how CES and cars are meshing together. In fact, that's going to be a theme throughout this episode, is about how we're seeing sort of high-tech stuff outside of the direct control of an automobile make its way into the vehicle.
Yeah, and some things you wouldn't expect to see in an automobile that do make its way into that automobile.
Like, yeah.
Generally, it's apps and things like that.
Sure.
We get it. But there's some hardware changes and some other surprising things along the way, too.
Right. And the first thing I want to start off with, Scott, is talking about Toyota. I want to get that out of the way. So, first of all, full disclosure, I was there at CES partially in my role as host of Forward Thinking, which is sponsored by Toyota. Mm-hmm. This show is not sponsored by Toyota, but I just wanted to get that out of the way. So they had a presentation that they were calling Moving Safely into Future Mobility. And it was all really about artificial intelligence. Now, in 2015... it was announced that Toyota was going to fund two different research facilities, one near Stanford, one near MIT, dedicated to researching artificial intelligence, specifically in regards to automotive industry, but beyond that as well. And then it was announced that they were going to put in $1 billion over the next 5 years into these two research facilities. And they're actually working on two different things. So the Stanford group is working on something where you are trying to eliminate uncertainty in AI. And by that, what they mean is, Scott, you're driving your car. You're driving down at highway speeds on a highway, and you notice that the car in front of you, it's got some barrels in the bed of a truck, and one of the barrels happens to fly out, and you have a time to react. So you manage to swerve out of the way. You as a human being, you're able to recognize this, extrapolate from past experience, kind of know, because you know the car and know the road, you know sort of what you can do, what's within your abilities to do in reaction to something like that. The thing that the Stanford folks are working on is how do you program that kind of ability into artificial intelligence? Because machines are really good at reacting in a specific way to specific scenarios. So in other words, you could program in, all right, if a bicyclist swerves into your lane, then you slow down. Like you have the if this, then that. Mm-hmm. But you can't anticipate everything.
So this is like a split-second reaction. Everything that goes into a human split-second reaction is what they have to find some kind of way to develop for their own AI system to recognize and react the proper way so that it – here's the question, though. Does it react to preserve the lives of the people that are in the car? Does it react to preserve the lives of the people that maybe are walking on the sidewalk?
This is the classic trolley problem.
Yeah, okay. Right. So who does the system protect? Does it protect the driver of the vehicle, or does it protect the people surrounding that vehicle?
And that's one of the questions that has to be asked, right? Yeah. Like how you know, knowing that there's going to be ultimately at some point a scenario where a car will have to quote-unquote decide to do something that is going to put someone in harm's way, how do you determine how the car will make that decision? And that's part of it, is just this idea of you can program AI to handle the mundane situations of driving really well. We have pretty much got that down, right?
Manufacturers are essentially doing that now. They just can't legally say that you're allowed to operate that vehicle without a driver in the driver's seat.
Right. So under normal operating conditions, so a normal day, like in a temperate area, so we're not talking about weather conditions like ice or snow. We're not talking about, you know, traffic system where maybe the traffic lights are on the blink. That could obviously cause issues with a car that is designed to wait until a green light comes up, that kind of stuff. But under normal operating conditions, they're very safe. The point that Toyota was making is that that's not the way the world works, and that you could argue that right now we have a million-mile safety record with autonomous cars just because that's the number of miles autonomous cars have traveled collectively. But they argue that we really need a trillion-mile safety record to prove that autonomous cars are safe enough for us to hand over control to machines and not be at least partially in control.
Well, that's part of the reason we always see this this decade out date where they say, we're going to have this ready by 2025 or 2030 in some cases.
Yeah.
We don't even plan to have anything fully autonomous until 15 years from now, but we're going to do these incremental steps along the way so that in 10 years we're going to have one that's pretty good, that's nearly there.
And so that's exactly what Toyota is saying, that they want to have focus on driver assist systems where the AI can come in and help out if something extraordinary happens or if something happens outside of your awareness and help you avoid an accident, but it doesn't completely take over for the driver.
Now, check me if I'm wrong here, but I saw just a little video clip of a display that was happening at one of the Toyota booths, and I don't know if this is tied in with this exactly, but they had almost looked like a fish tank. It was a big area with a table.
Yes,
and
they
had
the
a
cars.
Lot of, yeah, they had a lot of miniature, you know, scale model cars. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they were Prius cars or what they were, but they were rolling around, and I guess when they initially kind of released all these cars, maybe 10 or 12 cars into this glass box. They were all bumping into each other, and it was just kind of chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And the cars were then learning how to drive around each other without colliding with objects that were in the display and other vehicles. And by the end of the demonstration, or at least when they were showing this video clip, or when they were recording this clip, the cars were not colliding at all. They weren't touching. They were, you know, sensing each other and moving to make some, you know, making some kind of avoidance maneuver.
Sure.
In a smart way, so that they didn't bump into another vehicle or another object or the wall or whatever. It was just it was a clever way to show that.
Yeah, it was neat because again, they, you know, Toyota had a couple of vehicles on the show floor, but this was a way of showing off this technology in a live setting that still didn't require you to actually go outside and see a bunch of Priuses kind of pirouette around each other. I know exactly what you're talking about because I got a good look at this. So, yeah, it's sort of a grid, and each car had its own route that it had to go along. And at first, it was trying to go along this route, not really caring what the other cars in the area were trying to do, and that's where they were having these little collisions and stuff and figuring things out.
Yeah, sure. My neighbor drives like that.
Nice. And when the learning algorithm kicked in, then they were able to start, pausing to let another car go in front of them before, or cross in front of them before they went, and it became this very intricate, almost like a dance that you could watch. And they had a video streaming in the background explaining the whole process, that this was a machine learning algorithm that would be applied on a much grander scale to technology that would find its way in cars down the road.
Yeah, it's almost like a fish school mentality, like they all move one way together and it's all fluid and there's not really much fish colliding all the time. They all know where the other one's going. It's like
they're maintaining that distance.
Yeah, it seems like that. It looks like that when you see it happening.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool to watch. Like, I got to watch it for a really long time as we were setting up a shot.
Yeah.
And so, it was neat seeing how these were working. And in fact, one of the people from Toyota said, some of our competitors were coming in to make sure that it wasn't like remote controlled vehicles, that was all actually autonomous. And in fact, it was autonomous.
Oh, that's
just
really cool.
Just little bitty model cars.
Yeah. One thing at this, that you sent me an article here, at least from the New York Times, that mentions this, Toyota investment of $1 billion in artificial intelligence here in the United States. And it said, and I thought this was pretty interesting, that artificial intelligence technologies were disappointing for decades. And I've never really thought of them as disappointing. I mean, I see them incrementally growing, getting better.
Yeah.
But I never really saw them as being disappointing.
I think part of it is that there is the public expectation of what artificial intelligence is. Mm-hmm. Versus the actual definition of artificial intelligence. So if you look at artificial intelligence as being a very broad spectrum that encompasses a ton of stuff, and on the simplest level, it's on the idea of sensing a change in the environment and being able to react to it. That's a type of artificial intelligence. And on, of course, the far end of the spectrum is human-like or superhuman intelligence, which obviously we have not really achieved. But, a lot of people think that superhuman or human-like intelligence is the definition of AI. They don't realize necessarily that artificial intelligence means lots of different stuff.
Well, just to give you an example, I mean, this article in particular mentions Siri as a tremendous advancement in artificial intelligence. Now, I know that you've probably talked about this at length on
your
show, but I can kind of understand that. That's like finally the general populace, I guess, is getting a chance to kind of toy with this a little bit and see what it can do, what it's capable of. And I know it's I don't know. I have trouble calling it true artificial intelligence.
Yeah, no, it's voice recognition, which is already impressive.
Yeah.
Right? And then it's pairing that with an ability to execute on certain apps or do searches. But then you think about it, if you're going to call Siri artificial intelligence, you might as well call a Google search artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
Because Siri is just really a new way to interface with a system that's been in place for several years.
Exactly. Now, okay, but we're seeing more and more stuff like Siri implemented into automobiles with voice recognition.
Yeah, we'll be talking a lot about that.
And to be able to control certain things in the car, which are getting far more advanced than they were even last year.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, the level of interaction. I mean, I got to say, I've never really been all that impressed with any of these apps that you can have on your phone that maybe turn on the lights in your living room.
Yeah.
Or, you can adjust your thermostat. Like,
Scott,
you
say that, but until you convince your loved ones that your house is haunted because you are using the app while you're at work to turn the lights on and off, you really haven't lived.
I see. So it's, so it's good for practical jokers, too.
I've been guilty of that. I've turned the lights off on my wife while I was at work.
That's a pretty funny trick. Honestly, what we're going to cover here today, it goes far beyond that. I mean, because, again, like I said, I haven't really been all that, wowed by this stuff up until this point. Now it seems like you can really talk to this thing and make it do what you really want. I mean, and there's far-reaching implications with that.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that, I mean, that was one of the really big stories this year at CES, was that this sort of connected car technology is really starting to make sense, right? It's gone beyond It made me think of the way smart TVs were when they first came out. Smart TVs, when they first came out, you get a widget on your screen. Mm-hmm. And it would tell you, you know, what the temperature was outside and how likely is it going to rain. And it wasn't very attractive. It wasn't very useful. And often it was difficult to navigate around these systems because it was more like, hey, we can put internet content on a television. Let's go ahead and do that before we figure out what's the best way to incorporate it so that the experience is a positive one. And I think cars have had the same thing.
They are getting there now, I'll tell you, because this whole Ford Alexa thing that you've mentioned, this is one of the topics that you wanted to talk about. So do you mind if we go to that
now? Let's do it.
All right. So Ford is kind of working with Echo and Alexa. And they're incorporating this into their already existing Sync program. And I think they're at the third generation of the Sync program for their cars. Right?
Yeah.
I don't even know if Sync program is the right way to say that. Sync
platform.
Platform. That's a better way. So you can go to Ford.com and check out what Sync will do. But I'll tell you that this next level where they've taken it, the way they've integrated everything that Sync will do with Echo and with Alexa. So that's like is it a personal assistant or what do they call that?
Yeah, they're calling them voice concierge.
Ah, voice concierge. So I was reading an article about this from Jalopnik, and it's a car site. And one of the things, and this impressed me, it's not just turn the lights on set the temperature. It says, you can, from your car on the way home, you can say, Alexa, turn the kitchen lights on, open the garage door, heat the oven to 400 degrees, and turn on a baseball game. So when you get home, all this stuff is ready to go. It's all set to go.
Yep.
And Mercedes-Benz is working with Nest to do something very similar. So other auto manufacturers are working with different companies to do similar things.
One of them's working with Microsoft and has Cortana, which is Microsoft's version of a voice concierge, incorporating that. We'll get to that in a little bit, too.
And you can set start times for your car. So here's the usual routine. You know, you've got the automatic start that, you know, the manufacturer builds into the system. That's one thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you still, and I know this sounds kind of silly, but you still have to, you know, go near the window, I guess, and look at your car and push the button and know that,
sure,
you know, the previous night you turned the heat on high and the defroster on and all that stuff. And it sets, or, you know, some manufacturers probably have settings that automatically do that. But you have some type of physical interaction you have to do with your car in the morning. You have to remember, I'm going to turn that on 10 minutes before I go out.
Right.
So it's freezing cold.
Clear off the frost on the windshield. Make sure the car is a nice temperature before I get in.
Exactly. It's all about comfort, right?
Yeah.
So this system, this new Ford Alexa Echo system will allow you to set a time. Like on Monday morning, I want the car to start at 5:45 a.m. I want the interior temperature to be 75 degrees. I want, whatever. You could adjust you could turn the radio station to whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
But you can program all that in days ahead of time. It's like setting a schedule for your car. My question is with that, though, what if things change and you forget to do that? Then your car is running out in the driveway for, you know, an hour and a half or whatever before you remember that it's actually running.
I would imagine that, assuming you're having this work with the Echo, which is essentially a speaker that has a microphone embedded in it, so you can speak into it, it can talk back to you. I would imagine a fail-safe would be to have the speaker chime or otherwise alert you that your car has been running but hasn't been doing anything after a certain amount of time has passed, like maybe 5 minutes. That would be my solution to that problem. But it is something that obviously you have to think about when you're trying to implement these kind of approaches into the automobile industry. I mean, this is stuff that we've seen in smart homes to some degree or another, and to see it kind of creep into cars, you know, hopefully people were taking lessons they've learned from the other implementations and trying to figure out the best practices when applying it to cars.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, you can schedule service reminders and things like that. Now, that's not anything new because cars can do that kind of on their own. You can program that in for just a date. But they can also detect if there's, you know, something missing out of your refrigerator. So let's say that you're at the grocery store and you're in your connected car and you've got your connected home and your device that, you know, interfaces between the two of them. You're in the grocery store parking lot, though, and you don't remember if you have milk.
Right.
And you can now check, while you're in the car at the grocery store, you can check to see if you have milk in the fridge at home without having to have somebody there to say, yeah, pick up a gallon of milk on the way home.
Right. So this does require, obviously, that you have various smart appliances to network together, right?
Well, sure.
Yeah, if it's just a regular old fridge or a keginator, as we might have back at home, it's not going to be able to chime up. But, yeah, it's this interconnectivity. And, in fact, that's one of the big assets that Amazon has is the Echo can work with lots of other different home automation products, not just ones from one company, which is a huge deal, Scott. I can't tell you how big a deal this is. To have a connected home, like in the early days, everyone was trying to make sure their approach was going to become the standard approach, which meant that there was no standard. You had a bunch of proprietary approaches that wouldn't talk to each other. Mm-hmm. So products like the Echo and some apps that I've seen are finally getting to the point where you can interface with different products from different companies. So you don't have to buy in on just one system. If you happen to like one manufacturer's refrigerator, let's say you like Whirlpool and you really want the newest smart Whirlpool fridge, which, by the way, I've seen and it's pretty sweet. If you wanted one of those, but you wanted to have your other devices from a different manufacturer, it'd be difficult to have them all talking to each other. But something like the Echo can act like a hub, and then your car becomes an extension of that hub. And that's where you can do things like check to see if when was the last time I bought milk? So, oh, it was 2 weeks ago. Like, oh, I got to buy milk. You know, that kind
of
thing.
That's the whole reason we're talking about it today, because they're adding the automobile to this whole mix. That,
yeah.
You know, you can, it's now completely mobile. You can really truly control your home from your car, and you can do a lot of things in your car from home as well. I mean,
yeah.
Things that you just wouldn't think that you would normally need. I mean, it's all luxury.
I love the idea of it too. Like, some of it, it's definitely luxury, but some of it is incredibly helpful for people who are both absent-minded and a little OCD. So I don't know, Scott, if you've ever experienced this, but my wife and I, when we go out anywhere, there will come a time, usually when we're about a mile and a half away from home, when the question, was the front door locked? Or did the garage door come all the way down? Or was the oven on? Something, some variation of that will be asked. And then ultimately what has to happen is a return trip home before we ever get to our destination. And Alexa, one of the things it can do is it can tell you, and presumably, at least in future implementations, it can even correct things if they are incorrect. Like if you say, hey, is the front door locked? No, it's not. It's unlocked. Oh, can you lock the front door for me? Yes. Click. And then you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Very smart. Now, I want to show you something. And this is only your benefit, not the listener's benefit. But see this page?
Yeah.
Where I have the word yes with two exclamation points?
Yeah.
I have underlined the line that says, asking, for example, whether the garage door is closed. Every time I leave my house, I look at the garage door, make sure it's closed, and I whisper to myself, the garage door is closed.
Yeah.
And
so,
it's like a little routine. It's a pattern I have. And if I ever leave without doing that, I have to return and make sure that garage door is closed, because I got a lot of valuable stuff in there. My tools.
Yeah.
I got my project car in there. Who knows what else is in there? But bicycles, things like that.
See, for us, not only do we have stuff that's valuable in our garage, but that's a direct route into our house. And so
that's true.
And so it's where all our other stuff happens to be. Yeah. And so.
So you mean when you walked out the door, you didn't say the garage door is locked?
We actually say, yeah. We say door is down. That is the key phrase. And I am not joking. If we pull out of our home area and neither of us have said door is down, there will come a point where my wife will say, did the garage door go down? And because I don't want to lie to my wife, mm-hmm. like I want to get to where I'm going, but I never want to get to where I'm going more than I want to. You know, like that's never so great that I will lie. I'll say, I don't know. Let me turn around and go look.
I am sometimes ridiculed for my whispering of, the garage door is down.
Door
is closed.
Yeah, when you say it and you've got that, like, all right, that chapter is closed. Now a new chapter can begin. This is the journey chapter.
Isn't it funny? I know people have this type of thing, and it's very low-level OCD. I understand that.
Yeah.
I get it. But I know people have this for all kinds of items in their house,
sure.
in their automobile. This really does smooth out some of that.
Yeah.
I mean, how helpful would that be if you're – 10 miles away, and you can check to make sure that stupid garage door is down.
Or even close it otherwise, right?
Yes, yeah. Or you didn't leave the dishwasher on or something while you're gone because your fear of, flooding the kitchen or
whatever. Sure. And the best thing, Scott, absolute best thing, Alexa will never mock you for it.
That's,
ever.
That is probably the best part of the whole thing.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
So moving on to some of the other manufacturers that we saw, we stopped by Volkswagen.
Yes.
And so, of course, Volkswagen obviously still in the wake of the PR disaster that was the clean diesel scandal.
Sure. So were they trotting out their latest diesel technology?
They, oddly enough, left that off the show floor.
Well, that is an interesting move.
Yeah. They instead decided to show off an electric vehicle concept design called the Buddy. B-U-D-D-E.
Pauly Shore.
Yeah, nice. I did that on a previous CES episode and got a lot of people saying, I know who Pauly Shore is. Thank you for the Pauly Shore reference. But yeah, the Buddy electric vehicle concept, which it's kind of funny. It relates in a way to another car that we'll talk about, the FF01. And I know that you and Ben covered Faraday Future's FF01 in an episode, right?
We did, yes. We had a whole episode about it.
So in a similar way to what that concept was, Volkswagen's idea was to create a sort of modular approach to designing electric vehicles. And so this was really just a representation of that idea. That being said, it kind of had this sort of quirky retro futuristic design to it. Very angular, very odd looking, but well, I really dug it.
Do you think was it trying to play on the old VW microbus thing?
I think so, a little bit, but it definitely in a way that was not, like, it was obviously not a recreation of the microbus just with new lighting and stuff. It was the design itself had changed pretty dramatically.
Okay. And, I heard one of the biggest parts of this whole thing that made it interesting was that it's not going to support any kind of – it was designed without the intent to support any kind of internal combustion engine.
Right.
So it's purely electric.
Yep.
And they're going full on with this and saying this is the way we're gonna build this vehicle, this platform mm-hmm. vehicle. And it's going to be customizable, of course. We're going to be able to kind of change things around. But they've got an idea that – right now, it's going to use – it can use up to three different types of batteries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
There's three different types. There's the cylindrical, pouch, and prismatic cells. And I think right now they're only using two of those. They're using prismatic and pouch cells at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So haven't decided yet on the cylindrical, but they say it gives them the flexibility to adapt to whatever becomes the forerunner in that field.
Right. So with this approach, they can design any number of vehicle structures, like whether it's a car or a van or whatever. They can go with that because of this modular approach. They just change out the size of the battery, the capacity of the battery, essentially, and the size of the chassis, obviously. But it gives them a common starting ground for lots of different vehicle types. And the battery pack itself is flat and fits under the car. So you get this nice flat interior, which made it incredibly roomy on the inside. Not that we were allowed to get in. Mm-hmm. No one was allowed to get very close to this thing,
yeah.
At least at the time we were there.
It's surprising, isn't it, how much room that frees up when it's a flat floor like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, it is phenomenal, where it's just like you just look at it and you think, wow, I would have so much room to stretch out. And you know, you could even have luggage in the cabin along with passengers, and it wouldn't even get in the way.
Yeah, you get in, it feels like an empty bus or something.
Yeah.
It's big.
Yeah, and it has the Buddy concept car had two electric motors, one for the front wheels, one for the back. Supposedly had a 101 kilowatt hour capacity battery that would provide a driving range of 373 miles, although when asked about it, Volkswagen essentially said, actually, that's what we're working toward. That's our goal. We're not there yet.
So they backed it down a bit.
Yeah. Most people say around 300 miles max.
Ah, now see, I saw a different number that said when they ran it through testing based on the U.S. EPA cycle. So, you know, the way that they normally determine for these electric vehicles, the comparison mileage, I guess, or the equivalent. They said the equivalent was going to be 233 miles per gallon.
Wow.
But that's, you know what, I should even say per gallon. That's the range. That's how long these batteries will last.
Right.
233, so that's a significant drop from what they came out with at the show.
Yeah, more than, yeah.
So
when they say 373 and it goes to 233, that is significant.
But what is interesting, and they didn't back down on this, is that they can charge 80% of the battery capacity in about 15 minutes, and that's pretty good.
Yeah.
If that holds, if that sticks and that's true, that's a significant step forward.
It's good. I don't know that it's good enough. Like Tesla's idea about having not just the super fast charging stations, but also the option to switch out a battery if you are on the go, that makes a lot of sense for people who are used to being able to pull into a gas station and refill in a couple of minutes.
It does, but look how many gas stations there are.
Yeah.
I mean, there are four on every corner.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
Well, I don't mean to shoot you down on that idea or anything.
It's
just the quick changing things. They can be a lot fewer and far between, I suppose.
Yes.
For the battery swaps. The supercharger stations, however, I think those have to be fairly common.
Yeah.
Because a Tesla right now, a Model S, the charge times, if you have a supercharger station, or I think that's what they call it, a supercharger station, it takes you about 1 hour to fully charge the battery, and that's a 300-mile range. But if you don't have a supercharger station, you're just relying on plain old electricity from the wall, a plug-in, you get something like 22 miles of range for every hour of charging. So that's a significant drop in it's an increase in the time that it would take you to get somewhere. So, I mean, for VW to say 80% of battery capacity in 15 minutes, so what's 80% of 233 miles? That's pretty good.
Yeah. No, it's definitely significant. They had some other cool features on this, including big display screens that would replace your typical dashboard. So it was like a bunch of almost like tablet-style computers.
Mm-hmm.
Plus gesture controls. Gesture controls were huge with cars this year.
Yeah.
That's where you don't even have to touch the screen. You can move your hands at a certain height, and a camera will detect the presence of your hand and then interpret that as a command. So you can swipe through options or select something by typically acting like you're pushing a button in midair. That tends to be the...
It's like you're playing charades or something.
Yeah.
You know, I saw that this is an infrared system, so it's kind of a cost-cutting measure on their part, because there are other ways to do it as well.
Sure.
But this one, they claim they're going to use infrared just to keep costs down. Now, again, this is not really meant to be a production model.
Right.
This is strictly a show car.
It's just really to show off the technologies that Volkswagen's been working with. Many of which may find their way into production vehicles in the future, but not necessarily the Buddy itself. You're not going to find the Buddy on a show floor for you to purchase.
No, it's just a rolling test bed at this point.
In fact, I should say that I suspect at least a few of the vehicles on the showroom floor at CES are no more than a shell with nothing that actually makes the thing go.
I think Faraday's like that, isn't it? I'm trying to remember back to our program, and I think that it's not really on a powered platform at this point. It's all theoretical.
Yeah. I do not know the answer to that to be able to say definitively one way or the other, but it would not surprise me.
I'll tell you, that's not anything brand new, really. Show cars, even at the big auto shows in the past, mm-hmm. there have been many times when they have to be pushed out on the stage, or they have some just really low power module underneath. It's not like what they claim is under the hood.
Right.
You know, it's just something just to get out on the stage for the show, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Never look under the hood.
I know that one of the Toyota fuel cell vehicles was like that, in that the chassis they were showing off was a concept, but the car underneath it was not actually a fuel cell vehicle, whereas the fuel cell vehicle they had on display was using a modified Toyota, previously existing Toyota model as the chassis.
Yeah.
So it's just one of those things where it's like we have the idea, we have the technology, we haven't gotten into production yet, so we don't have a model that actually works with the technology we're talking about fully formed.
And that's not every case. I mean, there have been running, driving concept cars, or what they call dream cars, for decades, of course, you know, since the beginning. But there were always those cases where they bring out some just crazy design that doesn't really have anything under the hood or anything. And it was kind of a big deal, again, back in the late 80s and early 90s, when companies started making running, driving prototype vehicles, mm-hmm. All these concept cars. And it was kind of like, this thing really drives like that. I mean, it was the, I think, I'm not going to say the first or anything, but I remember like hearing about the Viper,
right.
The Dodge Viper, and they're like, "This thing actually drives. We can drive it on the Indianapolis 500 track."
Yeah.
And you're like, "No way! That thing it actually has a V10 engine." You know, they claim it did, but it really did.
Yeah.
And the Plymouth Prowler, and you know, vehicles like that along the way that you thought, "Man,
you're
these
naming
are cool
all the
cars
that I thought were awesome when I was younger."
Yeah, sure. Well, that's kind of the resurgence of like, well, this thing actually does what we say it does. It's
right.
It's not just a shell.
Yeah. There were some other cool technologies on display to stick with a connected car and gesture controls. BMW showed off their iVision future interaction platform, which again is another network car. All those commands that you would issue to the car can be done by touchscreen or by voice control or again by gestures. And the steering wheel, actually, did you see the steering wheel on this thing?
I did.
With the lights?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are three different modes of driving this vehicle. There's pure drive, where the vehicle is under the control of a human driver. Well, at least presumably a human driver.
A driver.
Could be a dog. Well, you would hope it would not be.
I suppose it could be at this point.
Then there was assist mode, which was kind of where you have that autonomous ability to kick into gear should something go wrong to protect the driver and the car. And then you had pure autonomous mode or auto mode. And the steering wheel would light up to indicate which mode you were in. So if you were in auto mode, it would be blue. The steering wheel, like pretty much at the, you know, the 3 and 9 positions up would be blue, like up to the top. And then if you wanted to switch over to pure drive, the lights would start to fade down from the top to the sides so that it would be an alert saying, hey, you should probably put your hands on the wheel now.
Because, right about here where the blue light is.
Yeah. So and then before it would switch to pure drive mode, the lights turn red to indicate, hey, seriously, take the wheel. I'm not in control anymore.
Yeah. All right. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I got a major problem with this car. This is kind of why you invited me here, isn't it?
It's one of the many.
Is this the moment right here? Because
this could be a moment.
Let me tell you. All right, this is the this is the BMW i8 that they have modified. There's no doors on this car. There's no hood on this car. Roof on this car, rather.
Right.
But inside is where all this technology is happening. Mm-hmm. I get it. That's what their showcase is. They want you to have a clear, unobstructed view of that. So I get it. What I almost cannot believe I'm hearing from BMW, which, by the way, used to be called the ultimate driving machine, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, the ultimate driving machine. Now, here's what this says. BMW's latest technology reduces the amount of driver control to a minimum in order to simplify driving, and driving can be stressful for some. And that's when it goes into the three modes.
Right.
Come on. This is part of the stuff that this is their message.
Scott,
I get it.
There's
I get
a future that's coming, Scott.
Okay. All right.
And we're all going there. Some of us are striding toward it.
Some of us are
screaming and digging our nails in.
But this company in particular, and I understand that, you know, they have to keep up. They have to remain relevant.
Sure.
And I get that's why they're doing it. So I'm not that old that I don't understand that. I really do. They have to remain relevant. They have to sell product, right?
Yes.
So that's what they're doing. I get it. But for a company that claims to be the ultimate driving machine, and they are known for building cars that drivers really, really enjoy. They pay a premium to drive a BMW because of the experience. It's a driver's car.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain vehicle. You could expect that out of Porsche as well. You expect a certain experience when you get behind the wheel. And this is removing all that. You're just saying, I want the brand name. I want it to be this i8 or whatever platform they put it in.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really want to do anything. I don't want to experience that anymore. I'd rather just sit back and read a book maybe while I go to work. Why not take the train?
It sounds to me like a glorious future, but I don't see where the problem is, honestly.
Your listeners have come to expect this kind of rant from me,
that's good. That's why I get you on the show.
But honest, really, I mean, really think about it. I mean, this is supposed to be a driver's car. It's an odd move from this manufacturer. That's all I'm saying.
Well, and to be fair, I mean, they do still have the pure drive mode, where I think that's what they're relying on, that to continue their kind of their slogan about the driving experience, while still also investing in these technologies that if they don't really look into, they will literally be left behind.
And I understand that not every vehicle is going to receive this type of treatment, and they've got the rest of the product line. And if you look at BMW's page, you'll see that they have a lot of different products that are, in fact, a lot of fun to drive.
Did you happen to see the demonstration of their self-parking technology?
Not for BMW.
So BMW has shown off self-parking a couple times. Like, it's not like it's brand new, except that this year they showed off that they had a new way to interact with self-parking. Because usually you would get out of your car, you might have a button on your key fob that says park, and you would press it and the car would pull itself into a parking slot.
Very impressive.
And you could even maybe, with something like Alexa, have voice control where you could say park the car and then jump out and it would park the car. That would be cool too. BMW decided to go the air controller route, but gesture controls. You can actually gesture to your car.
No way.
To take a spot and to move the car while you're outside of it to go and park.
Really?
Yeah, they actually showed off. They had journalists sit in the passenger side, no one in the driver's seat, have a BMW representative standing there gesturing to the car and to the parking space, and the car would maneuver over into the parking
space.
Now,
I've got to ask you this. Do you have to have those flashlights with the cones on the end to do this?
You don't have to have them, but I think it presents a certain element of style.
I absolutely would. Plus the giant earmuffs.
Right, exactly. The BMW engines can get loud, so you want to be able to protect your ears.
That is funny.
But yeah,
that's a shock to me. I'll have to seek a video of this because I've got to see somebody directing their car as if it's an airplane into a parking spot.
I think it was, I want to say it was The Verge where I saw the video demonstration of this particular technology. I should go on to say, I didn't get a chance to see this personally. This was something that I saw after I got back. This is one of the most frustrating things about attending CES, is you get to see a lot of really cool stuff. But when you come back, you see all this really cool stuff that you didn't have a chance to experience yourself.
There's just no way.
There's no, yeah, no, there is absolutely no way. Yeah. Like, even if you spent every single second running from thing to thing, you would still miss stuff. So next we have Kia, which normally I think I wouldn't have even registered with me. But again, Kia, again, moving on this same sort of autonomous car bandwagon, I guess you could call it, introduced its DriveWise platform.
Yeah, on the Soul EV platform, right?
So, yeah.
You know, it's in a product that they currently build, which makes sense. It's not like they're bringing out some concept vehicle that's a, you know, pie in the sky idea that maybe will never happen. They're saying, no, we're going to put it into our actual product. Right, here's what we have available right now that it works in.
Yeah, and so right now it's kind of a advanced driver assistance system, or ADAS. It's one of those where, again, similar to what I was talking about with Toyota, with pretty much everybody, like it's this idea of a computer assisting a driver, normally just to intervene when there's something that the driver has not noticed or doesn't have the time to react to him or herself.
So this is the partially autonomous system, right?
Because
they've got two release dates.
Yes, this would be the earlier one.
The earlier one, which is scheduled to debut in 2020.
Yes.
And then a full 10 years beyond that, so in 2030 is when they're going to come out with the fully autonomous version.
That's what they're projecting right now. I think, honestly, Scott, if I have to be like, if you nailed me down, I'd have to say, I think a lot of these car companies are purposefully being conservative with those guesses.
I totally agree.
I think certain companies that are not car companies, like Google, are really pushing the envelope as far as the autonomous car technology goes, to the point where there will be enough demand from the consumer for some of those dates to get moved up. And I just think a lot of the car companies are trying to do two things. One, they want to make sure that they give themselves enough time to really develop the technology so that the vehicles they put out are safe. Nobody wants the autonomous car version of the clean diesel scandal, because that's a version where people will lose their lives.
Yes.
So obviously there's that. And I think the other one is just that there's this fear, a well-founded one, I would argue, that the autonomous car future is also going to be the future where fewer people own personal vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no argument from me on those points. I think that's really going to happen. I think a lot of people are going to jump on this and want that. And I think that manufacturers are kind of hedging their bets a little bit and saying, 2030 is when we're going to go fully autonomous, but I wouldn't be surprised if that date moves up by 5 years.
Yeah,
I mean, a long, long way. It's kind of that under-promise, over-deliver thing, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you don't want to say in 2017 we're going to have a fully autonomous line and it's going to be fantastic, and then 2017 rolls around, you look back at that news story, and then you kind of press Kia and say, well, where are the fully autonomous vehicles? And they have to kind of put their, you know, head down and say, well, kick a rock and say,
didn't quite work
out.
Yeah,
you know, maybe in 5 more years, it's a bad spot to be in.
I think part of it is also the idea that if you go with the driver assist route rather than the fully autonomous route, you can keep that culture of personal car ownership going longer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because people will be interested in driving with these kind of vehicles. It's when you go the fully autonomous route where one vehicle price gets so high that the average person starts to have trouble affording one. And two, there's less need to have one in densely populated areas.
Yeah,
obviously,
sure.
In rural areas, that's a totally different story. But in cities where you could presumably get a service going with electric, not even electric, but fully autonomous vehicles, then there's very little reason to own your own vehicle.
Now see, I totally understand that. There's a time and a place for this type of thing. And really, it does work in some situations. Other situations, there's just no way that it would work. There are certain people that this type of idea, this car-sharing idea, this even EV cars, at this point, the way they are right now, wouldn't work for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, they do, and it's a great thing. And I get the move to autonomous and people's excitement around it, but I don't think it's ever going to go 100% either way.
Yeah, I used to be gung-ho autonomous, but I've eased off on that a little bit just because I recognize I'm thinking of it too narrowly, right? I'm thinking of it from my perspective, my own personal experience of using vehicles. For me, it makes perfect sense pretty much all the time. But there are plenty of outliers that you would say, all right, well, no, personal ownership is never going to completely go away. Mm-hmm. not as long as we still have people living outside of urban areas, and presumably that's going to continue. But to get back to Kia, I wanted to ask you this. Did you happen to look at their blind control system?
No, I didn't see
it. So it's a fingerprint scanner that identifies the driver. And then as you drive the vehicle begins to learn your style. And it learns what temperature you like to keep the car and what stations you tend to listen to and other ways that you actually handle the vehicle while you're driving it. And it builds a profile that's personalized to you. And then if someone else drives the car and scans their fingerprint, they get a profile. And then every time you drive the car afterward, when you scan, it knows it's you, automatically adjusts all those settings so that you get the driving experience you want and the other driver gets the driving experience they want.
Now, there have been very analog versions of this along the way. You can say this is driver one, driver two, driver three.
Yeah.
And hit the button and the seat changes position, the steering wheel changes position, the temperature controls, the radio stations, all that. I get it, but this is doing it with fingerprint technology.
Right.
That's pretty interesting. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of the way that, smart houses can adapt to the way, you know, they know that at a certain time you come home from work and you want the temperature at a certain setting. You want this light on, but not that one.
Mm-hmm.
And then later in the evening, turn that one off, turn that one on. And
right.
It starts to learn your patterns and things like that. I can see these two things working together. It's like, pretty soon you're just going to be able to walk. You're going to be able to walk through life without ever having to push another button or flip another switch.
Yeah. I've always mentioned this as, it'll come down to a conversation between you and another person about what's your reality like? Because here's what my reality is like, because everything is customizing itself to my convenience, my comfort, my preferences. So what's yours like? Because I bet you are a little different from me. And I'm curious how you experience life compared to how I experience life. That's going to be a real conversation in a few years.
That is strange, isn't it? That you won't have the same environment that you share, really, because everything will be so, as you said, tailored, I guess, to custom fit to you. It's going to be so different. It's really weird to think like you won't have to, again, flip a switch. You won't have to do anything manually practically anymore.
I do think smart thermostats are going to have to start seeking therapy for families like mine, where the preference is a matter of a couple of degrees and it's hotly contested territory.
Yes. Yeah, I can understand that. Ours, the switch on the side is almost worn out by the end of the season.
Yeah, it's kind of the same for us.
Mm-hmm.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to now.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
So we kind of mentioned Faraday Future already, and you guys, like I said, did a full episode on it.
Yeah, I mean, I got a pile of notes here on this whole thing. So you've seen this in person, though,
yes.
And I haven't. I've only read about it, and you know, kind of get the idea that some people thought it was really fantastic, and other reviewers went in and said, "This is absolutely ridiculous. I don't know what they're doing bringing this car to the show because this has nothing to do with what the company is really what the real message is here."
Yeah,
well, it did it in a way, but it wasn't a good representation of what they're going
to
do.
Right. So the representation is similar to what we were talking about with Volkswagen, this modular approach to designing and building vehicles, where you have a basic design that you can then modify for whatever purpose you need, whether it's a subcompact car, a race car, an SUV, a truck, whatever it might be. You can adjust the foundation, and then you have this modular battery system that allows you to add or remove batteries depending upon what vehicle it is that you're planning on building. So subcompact cars don't need as much battery power as, say, a race car.
I think they called it strings of batteries, didn't they?
Yeah.
You can adjust the size of the string of batteries that you put
right.
in these things.
Yeah, and they had a cool video that sort of showed the concept from a very high level. But I like the idea a lot because it allows for rapid development and prototyping. I mean, the car that they had on display did not exist 18 months ago.
Yeah, it's a killer car, by the way. I love it.
It looks like it's going fast while it's sitting still.
Yeah, it's awesome. I really do like it. Good design.
Scott, you know, I'm not a car guy.
No.
That's not me. I wanted to get behind the wheel of this car when I saw it. I was just like...
And you would be the only one able to do that because it's a single-seat car. It's a race car. So, you know, to drum up excitement, of course,
yeah.
They brought out the race car version.
Yeah. It was essentially a way of getting attention, right? First of all, a brand new company. This company has not been around for very long. Mostly mysterious. A lot of people had heard the name but didn't know a whole lot about it. It was getting most of its funding through China. So it's headquartered in Los Angeles, and it's going to have a manufacturing facility in Las Vegas. These were like the basic things people knew, but no one had seen anything or really knew what was going on behind the scenes. Found out it was this approach to making electric vehicles. That's their specialty. Taking this modular design so they could build any type of electrical vehicle. They have different powertrain or drivetrain layouts they can do. So, again, depending upon what your car needs, if it doesn't need a whole lot of power, then it's got a very simple drivetrain. If it's going to need a lot of torque for something where you're going to be hauling things or you're going to be driving like an SUV in rough areas, obviously they would have a different drivetrain than from a subcompact car.
Sure, four motors instead of two or something
like
that.
Yeah. They showed all the different variations where, like, there was one where it was like one motor attached to one wheel, and I was like, huh, okay.
A commuter car. That's what that would be.
Commuter car. So they also had the ability, they said, well, our designs, one of the things we wanted to work in from the beginning was that if we wanted to make it an autonomous vehicle, we could add that onto the frame as well.
Sure.
So in other words, it's not automatically going to be an autonomous vehicle, but they have the option to make any particular model they go into production with an autonomous version of that car.
Sure, pretty simple thing in an all-electric vehicle, really.
Yeah. So really cool idea. And the race car obviously was just a way of saying, come and take a look at what we have to show you. And it worked for me.
Yeah. But the problem was when they started interviewing the people that brought this technology out on stage, the ones that were conducting the press conference.
Yeah.
When they really started drilling down and asking them a lot of questions, here's the thing they got. They got a lot of, we don't really know the answer to that yet, but just trust us. It's going to work out. Everything's going to be fine. We know that we can achieve this. It's just right now we don't have the solution. That kind of answer.
It's a very much an internet startup approach.
Yeah.
And it's an internet startup approach to an industry that has very deep roots and a very, very high barrier to entry. In fact, I would say Faraday Future would have had zero chance of success were it not for a little company called Tesla.
Sure, yeah. But you can look at other examples that people immediately go to, and we've heard this from our listeners on car stuff as well. This looks an awful lot like something like an Elio. Mm. Or even if you want to go back farther, Tucker.
Sure.
Or Dale. Now, Dale's a different scenario because that was a just complete scam all around.
Right.
I mean, there's no way around that one.
Yeah.
But the others, Tucker and Elio, and there's been others throughout time as well that have done this, but they bring a real product out. They show you the real product, and they say, all we need is X million number of million dollars to get the first production run, batch of production out there.
Right.
And then from that point, we can take them out and
we'll
say
be self-sustaining.
We can sell you a dealership and you can sell these products and then we can, create more cars. And that's the way the whole thing works. But they've got to get over that initial hump.
Yeah.
And this one now, they've got a huge backing, right? They've got a lot of money.
Yes.
Available to them.
That doesn't necessarily guarantee success. Anyone who has backed a Kickstarter for any kind of technology, has probably had the experience at least once of backing something that never, ever came to fruition. And whether it was due to someone trying to pull a scam or someone underestimating the challenges they would face taking an idea from the concept stage to production or whatever it may be, you always encounter things that you did not anticipate when you first set out. A lot of people have experienced this disappointment in something that they backed not actually coming out. And that's a possibility. The nice thing is, it's someone else's money in the case of Faraday Future, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like in the case of Elio Motors, that's the most recent one, that we've been dealing with, mm-hmm. is that, people are sending in, $100, $200, $500 or whatever as kind of a down payment, a deposit, with the idea that that's starting the company and that, when they do start producing them, they're going to get first pick, they're going to get the first production run. They get little things along the way, little incentives, I guess, for doing that, whether it's bumper stickers or T-shirt or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But that company, the hurdle for that company is something like $250 or $300 million, and that's what it would take to get that company to start producing cars right now.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some other things, too, at this point, because some time has passed. But,
sure.
But this one, this is all being funded by one individual, and it's the I laugh when I see this, but it's the Chinese version of Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
That's how he's described. Now, he's the founder of I guess the Chinese version of Netflix over there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
he's got a lot of money, this guy. He's a billionaire. But he's not going to throw all of his money behind this whole thing, of course. He's
sure.
going to put some money behind it. But he's got deep pockets.
Yeah.
Is this going to make it? Because they're talking about putting a factory in, it's, a billion-dollar facility north of Las Vegas.
Yeah.
They're going to break ground on that. I believe it was at the end of this month, if not next month.
Mm-hmm.
So it's happening soon. Do you really see this thing going anywhere? Do you think they're going to do it, or are they going to come out, the week before and say, there's been a delay and we're going to do it at the end of this year?
Without having seen any of the actual inner workings of the company, it's really hard for me to say. I can say I want them to succeed so badly simply because I think it could be a truly disruptive approach to the automotive industry. And by disruptive, I don't mean like a dangerous thing or a destructive thing, but rather something that shakes stuff up enough that we start seeing crazy innovation across all manufacturers. That's what I want to see. And I want to see all boats rise. Like, I don't have a grudge against any particular company.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely wag my finger at Volkswagen for the clean diesel thing, but that's more of a emotional reaction to that scandal. But I want to see everybody benefit, and I would hate to see this be an example of an internet startup that got a lot of hype and then collapsed in on itself.
Yeah, see, Ben and I had a similar thought on our show when we talked about it on Car Stuff. We said, we truly do want them to succeed. This would be fantastic for development, as you said. It would push things along considerably. But with all the examples, the history that we've had, that we've seen and we've talked about on our show so many times, it's like you can remain hopeful, but be skeptical also.
Yes, there's good reason to employ critical thinking.
Sure, yeah. I mean, this thing may or may not end up being kind of vaporware, but I hope not. I'm really hoping for the best in this case.
I want a ride in it.
Yeah. I mean, again.
Faraday Future, if you're listening, I want a ride in your car.
Again, that's something we didn't mention. That's their race car version. That's like the top-end thing that they can produce. But the reality is they're road testing a vehicle right now that no one's seen.
Yes.
They've got a secret car that's out there testing somewhere.
Yes, so if you see a car go by you that you don't recognize and there's no marking on it, that might be them.
Yeah, it could be them. So they're out there somewhere testing this platform. And you never
know. Probably somewhere in California or Nevada.
Yeah, probably. It seems like those states are a little more loose with their, allowances, I guess.
Yeah.
I would be interested to see what they're going to come up with for the production vehicle, and will it kind of be like a what's that sad trombone moment, like when you see it, versus the race car that they showed at the CES show. I mean,
right.
It's like, it's good that they did that to get the excitement behind
the
brand.
Sort of like they promised you this, but they gave you this, that kind of thing.
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, you're going to be just a little bit disappointed, like, oh man, I was really hoping for that single seater, FF01 concept.
that car that probably would have cost around $300,000.
Oh, I mean, it's like a Batmobile or something. Yeah, it's cool.
It's pretty wicked.
Yeah, it really is.
The people on the floor, they were saying that they preferred to think of it as the car out of Minority Report.
Oh, yeah, okay, I could see that a little bit. Yeah. All right, there's another one that you wanted to mention today.
Yes, the last one, cherry on top of this sundae.
Yeah, and this one leaves me with my head shaking. I understand what this builder does. This is Rinspeed.
Yes, Rinspeed. And the vehicle we're talking about, the concept at any rate, is the Etos.
Yeah.
And also we should mention the Etos is actually a BMW i8-based concept car.
Of course, yeah. So the latest, greatest from BMW, but what they've done with it, I don't know. I don't know if I understand everything that they're trying to achieve with this car. But
I'm not sure they understand everything they're trying to achieve with
it. I mean, Rinspeed's done a lot of cool concepts in the past. Yeah. And, they've got – sure, some of them have some questionable features and things. But when I look at this one, the Etos, it's got a lot of questionable features.
So, let's talk about some of them. For one thing, the interface that they have is encased in two 21.5-inch curved 4K displays.
Yeah.
4K resolution. Scott, I mean, granted, you are pretty close to those displays when you're a driver, right? I mean, it's not that far away from you. And in fact, 4K resolution is insane to me because those displays would need to be enormous and you'd have to be even closer to appreciate the sharpness in that resolution.
Sure.
I can't believe 4K is necessary when 1080 would have sufficed. However,
that's nitpicking.
So let's say that you're driving this crazy concept, this variation on the BMW i8. You're driving around and you've got this nice steering wheel. It's got its own little panel right in the middle of it. And you think, oh, I'm going to hand over control to my car. You press a little button. The steering wheel folds in on itself, Scott.
Yeah.
And then it retracts into the dashboard.
Yeah, so it goes away.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that left me shaking my head. Like, most of these systems, even most of them recognize the idea that there's going to be a point when human interaction is probably going to be necessary, and we're going to alert you with a chime or lights, as you said on the that one steering wheel. The BMW i8, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Most manufacturers still get that, there's going to be a point where you're going to want to take control, or the car will say, I don't know if I can handle this, grab the wheel.
Right. Pshaw, says Rinspeed.
Yeah. So, I watched it happen in the video, the video clip, and it's not a fast motion for it to come back out.
I love it.
It's cool.
Love it.
It's cool looking.
It is not practical at all, Scott, I love it.
It's interesting to watch.
Yeah.
But the idea also of a folding steering wheel, that's another thing that makes me cringe just a little bit. That's not a great design, really.
Yeah, the two, if you think of a wheel, think of it, divide the wheel in half, and the top half and bottom half fold down along the column, the steering column, and the whole thing retracts back into the dashboard so that you are freed up to read a book.
Essentially, it looks like the passenger side of the vehicle at that point, really. It really does.
And the two displays extend forward. so that you can get more immersed in whatever tech, you know, entertainment you've got playing on your dashboard.
You can get a lot closer to that 4K
screen. Yeah, you can appreciate it a lot more when it's when it approaches you by 5 inches.
Yeah, when it's 8 inches away from your eyes or something. Yeah. So, and the other thing, now this just kind of made me laugh in the video. I don't know why this was featured in here, but there's a couple things more, but when they were showing the autonomous capability,
yeah,
they had the car at a track in Spain, a racetrack in Spain, and they clearly had a time, you know, a lap time, a lapse time from a human driver,
yes,
on the screen. So it's got, you know, an interface that allows you to record lap times, and it's really cool, a map of the track and everything, best, you know, kind of a best time with a little award, you know, a silver cup or whatever.
Yeah, it's almost equivalent to like a video game, except this is a real car that you're driving around a real track.
Yeah, sure. And we've seen that stuff, you know, in other cars. We get that, you know, they've got stuff like that. You know, they can measure times and speeds and all that. But this one was showing like, okay, I'm gonna let the autonomous feature take over and drive around this racetrack in Spain. And then that's when the driver decided to grab a book from the from what looks like a bookshelf on the passenger side.
Right. Anyway,
that thing was always loaded with books.
Yeah.
So while they're driving around this racetrack in Spain, the driver's reading a book. Now, I know that's to prove a point, that he's not touching the wheel, that there's no interaction there. But the car, of course, bested the human driver's time.
Yes.
You know, the car was much faster, or a little bit faster anyways. But I just thought that was so odd to see him doing that, you know, like to be on a racetrack of all places. I can get if you're on a boring commute or something.
Scott. Clearly, he was trying to psych out the robot car to show how little interest he had in the robot car's performance.
I thought you were going to say other drivers competing against, like, I'm just going to let it take over.
Yeah, like but, I'm going to read my Kafka here.
But you get my point, though. I mean, of all places, you're going to want to see. I mean, you're just going to want to pay attention and watch what's going on because it's exciting. It's thrilling. It's not like you're just going, you know, between downtown Atlanta and home. You
sure.
Know? It's nothing like that.
Let's be fair. It can sometimes be exciting.
It can be.
It also uses Microsoft's Cortana concierge service. So this is similar to Ford and Alexa. Cortana, I would argue, well, I mean, I've used Cortana a little bit because I've got Windows 10 on my computer at home, and Cortana is incorporated into Windows 10.
Sounds fancy.
I've used it a little bit, but I'm still very much a keyboard and mouse kind of guy, so I don't tend to talk to my computer unless something has gone wrong, and the words I'm saying are not words that a concierge is going to help me with.
I talk to my laptop here at work all the time, and boy, I'm glad it can't record what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Wait, it can't, can it?
I don't think so.
Oh, good.
At least unless some malware has been put on there. But the real reason we had to add this, besides all the ridiculous autonomous car features and the fact that Cortana is incorporated, is that this particular car also has a landing pad on the back of it for a DJI drone.
Yeah, this was probably the biggest head-scratcher for me. What is the point of that drone?
Well, the drone can fly along while you're driving and take video of you driving your really kick-ass BMW i8 concept car.
Well, I agree that is a cool thing to be able to do. I get it. You don't necessarily need to have a landing pad and a matching drone, I guess. You could just get one at Toys R Us or something, right?
Yeah.
Or the local hobby store.
Yeah.
But they did show, too, something that was kind of cool. Now, in the video, it's kind of a silly setup, right? I mean, it's a male-female. The female's flying the drone in some kind of – looks like they're in a warehouse or something.
Yeah, it's a big circular room where there's a staircase that's on the internal curved wall that goes up. So some very weird-looking space where the car is parked in the center of it.
But it's open to the air,
yes.
I guess. You know, there's an open top.
Yeah.
So the guy climbs back into the car. And the car alerts him, hey, it's Valentine's Day. Wouldn't you like to get some roses for your wife?
Yeah, and then he just says the word roses. And that sends a signal to the drone that the woman is currently controlling with a remote control. And the drone ends up going into auto mode and flies off, sending the woman into
a fit.
Yes, she is quite upset that she has lost control of this. And she confronts her husband, who takes off his glasses, his sunglasses, puts one stem of the sunglasses in his mouth and shrugs as if to say, hey, what are you gonna do?
Yeah, things happen.
And then they go down the stairs to get into their autonomous sports car of the future when the drone returns with a bouquet of roses that it has picked up from a delivery service.
It was like a messenger drone, right? It went out and it sought the nearest florist, which was, I believe on the screen it said 4.1 miles away.
Yeah, something like that.
A long, long distance. So it went out, got them, or no, it was 4 minutes away.
Yeah, 4.5 minutes
away. Right. So he attaches a bouquet of roses and it brings them right back to her. And everything is just great.
Everything's smoothed over at that point. She gives him a hug. Her one foot comes off the ground, you know, in classic hug pose.
Just truly touch. I had a tear at that point.
I felt something. It was a funny video to watch. I actually really enjoyed it. I think it's ridiculous is probably too strong a word. It's certainly whimsical.
Yes.
Let's say whimsical.
Yeah,
that's
nice.
It's
honestly it's worth watching. It's interesting to see.
The video is and also as proof of concept of certain technologies, it's really cool. I mean, I agree with you. I don't think that the autonomous approach, as awesome as this automated thing where the steering column retracts into the dashboard, as awesome a visual as that is, I don't think it's terribly practical. For one thing, it's a couple of different points of failure in a system that doesn't need any points of failure, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If anything goes wrong and then you switch to manual and some connection has been severed as a result of this process, that's bad. I did think that the whole thing was very fun. And I like the approach, like the forward thinking nature of the video was really cool. And
forward thinking, that's like that tattoo I can see on your neck.
Yeah, you know.
Is that new?
It's how they track me. At any rate, this was a lot of fun to talk to you about the technology that was on display at CES. Obviously, very different from the underlying technology that actually makes cars work. You know, we're not talking necessarily about motors or, you know, transmissions or that kind of stuff.
No, this is all add-on stuff. It's like, how can I make an app make that system better?
And again, like smart TVs, I think we're finally starting to see that idea mature to a point where it is something that could be marketable, as opposed to, well, we have the ability to throw this in there, let's just do it.
And I think we're maturing as well.
Baby steps, Scott. Baby steps.
Yeah, maybe.
Let's not set our expectations too high for me. So at any rate, if you guys want to hear the Faraday Future podcast, you got to go check out Car Stuff because you and Ben cover that. And make sure you listen to that episode. You guys go into a lot more detail about the whole process there.
We do excruciating detail.
That's the best kind. And thank you again for appearing on my show, Scott.
Oh, of course. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And it's always a fun conversation. It always feels easy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think there's anyone here that it's particularly difficult to jump into a podcast studio and talk, but it sure is nice to have that experience, right? Where you go in and you sit down and you're like, we're just going to talk about crazy car technology for an hour.
Essentially what this was today. I mean, I had a few notes, but man, it was just kind of winging it. And honestly, I like having your insight that you were there at the show too, to be able to kind of come back and report on what you've seen and how that differs from, you know, reviews, I guess, of the products. It's so much different when you talk to somebody who has firsthand experience.
Yeah, when you have a chance to actually witness stuff with your own eyes, and not only that, but just gauge interest on the floor. Like, are people reacting with skepticism? Are they reacting with, like, oohs and ahs? It's really cool to get that first-person experience.
Oh, yeah, it's very helpful that you went there and checked everything out for us.
Yeah, can't wait to do it again next year. Oh, I need to rest. All right, guys, well, that wraps it up for this episode of Tech Stuff. If you have suggestions for future episode topics, guests, guest hosts, anything like that, you should let me know. The email address you should use is techstuff@howstuffworks.com, or let me know on Facebook or Twitter. The handle at both of those is techstuff, HSW, and I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.